Task 2. Read the instructions and the questions for text 1 carefully. Listen to the recording for text 1.
I'm Jane Handler, and tonight I'm talking to an extraordinary man whose long and illustrious career has taken him all over the art world as a famous auctioneer. It's a real pleasure to have Henry Wyndham on the show tonight.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, you're one of the veterans of the art world, someone many experts look up to. But today I'd like to talk to you about the beginnings of your interest in art. What made you enter this world?
From a very young age, I had the collecting bug. You could call me a natural-born hoarder. I began with collecting stamps and then moved on to all sorts of things, like weaponry and swords. I think I must have been around 13 or 14 when I started to consider a career in art, which at the time did not please my parents very much. The idea of becoming an auctioneer hadn't occurred to me then. I rather thought about art dealing or running an antique shop. However, in my 20s, just out of curiosity, I enrolled on a Sotheby's course, and that steered me towards auction houses. Having seen what the work was like, I felt I would learn more in an auction house than I would as a dealer.
Was there a stage when you wondered whether you'd made the right choice? Have you always been more drawn to the commercial rather than the academic?
No matter how much I might have wanted to go for the latter, there wasn't any contest for me really, because I didn't do well academically. I got rather poor A-levels, and I never went to university. So when I started to consider art as a career option, the commercial side was much more realistic for me. In the art world, there's a fork in the road. Quite early, you have to decide that you either go one way or the other. Luckily, in my case, I didn't need to spend sleepless nights weighing the options. I only had one.
So what was the turning point in choosing your career path?
It was definitely getting a job at Christie's. I was there from October 1974. Luckily, prior to this, I'd done the Sotheby's Fine Art course, which I mentioned earlier. It was obviously helpful, especially that I was taught by an incredibly charismatic figure who used a very non-standard visual approach. It was really inspirational. But apart from that, I was relatively self-taught. I suppose you could say I was sort of an apprentice. I joined Christie's, but I had to learn a lot as I went along. And not being much good at studying, I took a different approach, more hands-on, you would say. I used to go to the National Gallery or British Museum in my lunch hour. That was immensely helpful, visiting museums and developing my eye. I personally think that there's no substitute for looking. You can read all the books in the world, but art is there to be looked at. That's the only way to discover its secrets and learn to appreciate it.
Can you tell our listeners?
Listen to the recording once again.
I'm Jane Handler, and tonight I'm talking to an extraordinary man whose long and illustrious career has taken him all over the art world as a famous auctioneer. It's a real pleasure to have Henry Wyndham on the show tonight.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, you're one of the veterans of the art world, someone many experts look up to. But today I'd like to talk to you about the beginnings of your interest in art. What made you enter this world?
From a very young age, I had the collecting bug. You could call me a natural-born hoarder. I began with collecting stamps and then moved on to all sorts of things, like weaponry and swords. I think I must have been around 13 or 14 when I started to consider a career in art, which at the time did not please my parents very much. The idea of becoming an auctioneer hadn't occurred to me then. I rather thought about art dealing or running an antique shop. However, in my 20s, just out of curiosity, I enrolled on a Sotheby's course, and that steered me towards auction houses. Having seen what the work was like, I felt I would learn more in an auction house than I would as a dealer.
Was there a stage when you wondered whether you'd made the right choice? Have you always been more drawn to the commercial rather than the academic?
No matter how much I might have wanted to go for the latter, there wasn't any contest for me really, because I didn't do well academically. I got rather poor A-levels, and I never went to university. So when I started to consider art as a career option, the commercial side was much more realistic for me. In the art world, there's a fork in the road. Quite early, you have to decide that you either go one way or the other. Luckily, in my case, I didn't need to spend sleepless nights weighing the options. I only had one.
So what was the turning point in choosing your career path?
It was definitely getting a job at Christie's. I was there from October 1974. Luckily, prior to this, I'd done the Sotheby's Fine Art course, which I mentioned earlier. It was obviously helpful, especially that I was taught by an incredibly charismatic figure who used a very non-standard visual approach. It was really inspirational. But apart from that, I was relatively self-taught. I suppose you could say I was sort of an apprentice. I joined Christie's, but I had to learn a lot as I went along. And not being much good at studying, I took a different approach, more hands-on, you would say. I used to go to the National Gallery or British Museum in my lunch hour. That was immensely helpful, visiting museums and developing my eye. I personally think that there's no substitute for looking. You can read all the books in the world, but art is there to be looked at. That's the only way to discover its secrets and learn to appreciate it.
Can you tell our listeners? Read the questions for text 2. Listen to the recording for text 2.
Joe Swinson, a Member of Parliament, in an unprecedented move, decided to file a complaint concerning a series of new adverts made by a cosmetics company. She had had enough. In her opinion, the ads weren't representative of the results the product could achieve. Under pressure from Swinson, the series of ads will no longer be displayed in the UK. The ads featured Julia Roberts as the face of a cosmetics brand. We all know she's one of the top-earning actresses. However, the advertisers most presumably felt compelled to strongly retouch, or airbrush, as it's called, Robert's photos. It was done so heavily that Joe Swinson filed a complaint and won. The company admitted retouching, but denied that its adverts were misleading. However, it was affirmed by the competent watchdog authority in the UK that the images were exaggerated, and that the company had breached its code of conduct. Joe Swinson said that while some retouching may be acceptable, the adverts were particularly bad examples of deceitful advertising and could contribute to body image problems. Not so long ago, another well-known actress, Demi Moore, found herself having to defend the photo of herself on the cover of a fashion magazine. The airbrushing of Moore's photograph resulted in the actress looking as though she was missing a part of her hips. That looked horrible. Moore was bewildered with what she saw and said she hadn't seen the cover photograph before it went to press. If she had, she said she wouldn't have agreed to it, but she refrained from taking any legal action. In articulating her complaint, Swinson said that retouching the images of models would contribute to an increase in the still rising number of young women suffering from eating disorders. She highlighted that more ethical standards should be adopted both by the industry and advertisers. Finally, she encouraged individual consumers with the ultimate power of the purse to make it clear to cosmetic brands that Julia Roberts and Demi Moore do look good enough to us without airbrushing.
Listen to the recording once again.
Joe Swinson, a Member of Parliament, in an unprecedented move, decided to file a complaint concerning a series of new adverts made by a cosmetics company. She had had enough. In her opinion, the ads weren't representative of the results the product could achieve. Under pressure from Swinson, the series of ads will no longer be displayed in the UK. The ads featured Julia Roberts as the face of a cosmetics brand. We all know she's one of the top-earning actresses. However, the advertisers most presumably felt compelled to strongly retouch, or airbrush, as it's called, Roberts' photos. It was done so heavily that Joe Swinson filed a complaint and won. The company admitted retouching, but denied that its adverts were misleading. However, it was affirmed by the competent watchdog authority in the UK that the images were exaggerated, and that the company had breached its code of conduct. Joe Swinson said that while some retouching may be acceptable, the adverts were particularly bad examples of deceitful advertising and could contribute to body image problems. Not so long ago, another well-known actress, Demi Moore, found herself having to defend the photo of herself on the cover of a fashion magazine. The airbrushing of Moore's photograph resulted in the actress looking as though she was missing a part of her hips. That looked horrible. Moore was bewildered with what she saw and said she hadn't seen the cover photograph before it went to press. If she had, she said she wouldn't have agreed to it, but she refrained from taking any legal action. In articulating her complaint, Swinson said that retouching the images of models would contribute to an increase in the still rising number of young women suffering from eating disorders. She highlighted that more ethical standards should be adopted both by the industry and advertisers. Finally, she encouraged individual consumers with the ultimate power of the purse to make it clear to cosmetic brands that Julia Roberts and Demi Moore do look good enough to us without airbrushing.